Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of mind power. And that's what we're going to be talking about today, but in a context that's a little bit different. We're going to be talking about acting, the science of acting, in fact. And my guest today, Helen Kogan, is the daughter of a man who is recognized as being one of the finest teachers for acting in the world. And he's from Russia. Helen, I want to welcome you to the show.
Thank you so much, Donna. It's great to be here.
Now, I want my listeners to know a little bit about your dad. His name is Sam Kogan. He studied at the Moscow Institute of Theater Arts, which is now the Russian Academy of Theater Arts. And he was trained by Professor Maria Nibal. And he decided, because of what he had experienced, that he wanted to learn a particular method of acting or helping actors, because he had been one himself. And so he developed the science of acting. You are the chair and former principal of the Academy of Science of Acting and Directing. You've worked with your father to be able to bring things into a written format. And you were very instrumental about bringing this publication to life. This must have really been a challenge for you to be able to do this.
In many ways, it was. In many ways, it was an amazing journey. My father passed away 5 years ago, and it took a couple of years that was a challenge, I suppose. It was the challenge of those first initial years, and then, but behind writing the book, there was definitely a drive, not only because the book really is 20 years of his life, if not more, but also because not only is what is contained in this book, you know, an incredible, unique tool for acting that doesn't exist anywhere else, it's also a technique that helps the individual in the street understand the way that they think in a way that I don't think any other book out there does.
I agree, because I've done some interviews through the years, and I feel like the material he's put together in The Science of Acting, which I know he lived, literally, and passed on to others, it's very succinct and very to the point, but yet there is a depth to what he put together, which is really what I think makes an actor so phenomenal. You have a quote in the front of your book by Herbert Spencer. I would like to share that with my listeners. Whoever hesitates to utter that which he thinks the highest truth, lest it should be too much in advance of the time, may reassure himself by looking at his acts from an impersonal point of view. It is not for nothing that he has in him these sympathies with some principles and repugnance to others. He, with all his capacities and aspirations and beliefs, is not an accident, but a product of the time. While he is a descendant of the past, he is a parent of the future, and his thoughts are as children born to him, which he may not carelessly let die. Your dad really worked on the science of acting for a number of years. Give us a little bit of a background about your dad, because he was from the former Soviet Union, but he went through a lot of things because he left. Why?
Why did he leave? Hello?
Yes.
Yes, sorry. Yes, he left. Well, he's Jewish, and he suffered a lot. And I found out more probably in the last few years than I knew his entire life, because he didn't really talk about it. But you know what I think is unique to his story, and really what's interesting is when you, by writing this book, is delving into the mind that created all of this work, is that the fact that he was Jewish and that he lived in the Soviet Union meant that you always had to be on guard. And you always have to be on guard about what you were thinking, what other people were thinking, who was going to snitch on you, who was going to talk about you, who you could trust and who you couldn't trust. And, you know, I think that partly refined the way that he thought, in that he always had to look for what was the truth and what were the real thoughts and what were devices and the cover-ups. My dad started his career by, as you said, training at the Moscow Institute of Theatre Art, where he learned the system of Stanislavski. And he came to London in the early 70s and was teaching Stanislavski at a number of drama schools. But what he found, and what Stanislavski himself admits, is that Stanislavski didn't cover enough of the subconscious. And what we realize today is that our subconscious rules us far more than our conscious thoughts. And in the science of acting, these terms, the visible and invisible thinking. And what my dad really puts together in the science of acting is that invisible thinking is almost running our lives, but almost in a way that it's keeping us quite rigid. We think the same thoughts all the time. We look in the mirror, we think the same thoughts about ourselves. We see our friends or our dog or a beautiful day, and we think the same things, and this keeps our thinking quite rigid, which could be great, which could be not so great, and which could be, you know, either way. And this book really helps you tease apart your thoughts to see really what is at the crux of your thinking and if it's giving you the life that you want. How this then applies to the actor is that really my dad's saying, if you can really understand the way that you think, the processes that are involved, then you apply this system to creating a character, well, that's when you create really believable characters, because you are creating an actual consciousness each time you create a character, rather than a character that just lives for the 1.5 hours of the script.
That is something that when we're watching programs, especially live theater, it's amazing how within just a matter of seconds you will know if someone has embraced the character that they are portraying. There is just a fascinating component there. And when people do take the time to work with what you call invisible thinking, getting into character, thinking of the actor that played Serpico in His Name. I can see his face in front of me and it's just escaping me for the moment. But I remember watching him in different roles, and I interviewed someone that had been with him from the time he had been like 18 or 19 years of age. And they said that he would put himself into environments where he literally would take on that persona of the environment that he was going to portray. And he absorbed the invisible thinking of the environment he was a part of, and it made his characters so absolutely phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. I think what's so surprising with this book, the more you read it, or the more you ask questions of yourself, is how much really makes us who we are.
Mm-hmm.
And we think it's just one or two memories here or there, but, you know, it talks about in the book as well, you can look at some of these thoughts as like a rolled-up coil, and once you really start seeing it, you pull that coil apart and you stretch it out so that it's completely straight. The inputs into our thinking are manifold, and if an actor takes the time to do that, and it doesn't have to take that long, because really all you're doing is using imagination and just using your mind, and it's a very enjoyable process. But as you say, that can just, as in the first few minutes or the first few seconds that you see an actor speaking, you can see whether or not they've embraced that or not.
Mm-hmm. It's really amazing. Now, your dad started with sharing things with you when you were 7 years old, and I love the illustration, the verbal illustration you give in the book, The Science of Acting, about sitting in a Chinese restaurant and he trying to communicate with a waiter about the kind of noodles that he wanted. Would you share that story? I think it's delightful.
It happened a couple of times. But we would, I would visit him on weekends. We'd often go for Chinese, and then he always wanted a specific type of noodle. And he would know the name in Mandarin, but his accent wasn't too great. I mean, it already was a Russian accent speaking English, but then to be speaking Mandarin, I don't think worked very well with some of the waiters that hadn't been in the UK for too long. So he would say what he wanted, and they wouldn't quite know what it was. And then he would use his fingers to sort of show them the width of each individual noodle and the thickness, and they would still look probably even more confused. And then, you know, he would often just get a napkin and get a pen out of his inside pocket, and he would draw them a 3D diagram of what that noodle would look like, and then they'd know, and then they'd be, you know, no language was needed once you had pictures, and so they would go off and they would bring him the dish.
Now, he really believed that the aspect of acting is something that you acquire a level of knowledge about, and that anybody can use it, anybody can acquire this knowledge. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to put together Science of Acting. I was intrigued with how, when he finally got to the point where, when he was married, and he and his wife opened up a restaurant, the questions he had in his own mind about Stanislavski's method and the questions he had an actor, because he had tried out for a part and was told, sorry, you can't do this part. And he didn't understand why he wasn't fitting into the part. And nobody could explain things to him. And that is what really triggered the beginning of this journey of developing the science of acting, wasn't it?
Absolutely. I think it was, he was about 18 when he went onto the stage. It was his first part, and he'd learned his lines. He went on, and he gave his performance, and the director just said, that wasn't right, do it again. And so he wasn't sure what he was supposed to do, so I think, you know, he says he spoke a little louder and changed the way he pronounced some of the words, and they said, well, this isn't right, do it again. And so before he started his acting career, he actually worked in the building, he was gone to Building Technology College. And so for him to then be on the stage and just be told, this isn't right, do it again, was very, I say, unstabilizing, or just left him very lost, because he says, you know, Building Technology College, if you don't do something right, cement isn't mixed the right way, you're told you add more sand, less water, and then you'll get the right cement. But just to be told, this isn't right, do it again, he said, well, this is no point of reference. And how can actors be confident, secure in their profession if they're just being told to do it again? And really, as you say, that is the basis of the science of acting. It's giving actors points of reference. It gives them a template to work with, and then they can build upon.
Now, Stanislavski's technique was really the in thing at the time your dad was growing up. And as he began to ask questions and develop his science of acting, he had a comment that the three circles of attention were unworkable, and also that he felt that the triumvirate of the motive forces, mind, will, and emotion were not enough. And that was part of Stanislavski's technique. But he also mentions a Mrs. Fisk. And she was an interesting woman. Who was Mrs. Fisk?
Well, she's, this is actually through my own research. Mrs. Fisk, this is much earlier, this was in the 1880s. I can't remember the exact date now. But it was an actress very early on, who, not having even heard of that the science of acting wasn't even developed for another 100 or so years, but even Stanislavski, but she talks about needing a science of acting, and for the very same reasons that my dad explains it, so that you know that once you've done a performance well, you know what you did in that performance for it to have gone well, so that you can then repeat that over and over again. The worst problem that actors find today is that they do a performance and they're congratulated and they're told they did a great job, but they don't know specifically what they did to achieve that. And then if they're especially on stage and you then have to repeat that performance, you know, every night for the next 3 months, 6 months, a year, it comes back to that thing that without points of reference, you lose your confidence, you lose your self-belief if you're not knowing exactly what you're doing to achieve your results.
Did the method acting style come out of your dad's work? Where did that come out from?
No, that, similar to the science of acting, it's rooted in Stanislavski's work. Stanislavski came over to the States, I think, about the 1920s, and he was talking a lot about his work, and they put on productions, and from that developed the method, many people are involved, Stella Adler, Lee Strasberg eventually, but there is the Actors Studio, all developed from Stanislavski bringing over his work. And similarly, my dad's work developed from Stanislavski's early work. So they're like different branches of a huge family tree.
Now, the book has a number of different sections. One, part one, you talk about the foundations. Part two, how the foundations of information come together. And part three is working on a script. And for those of you listening, if ever you've had an interest of drama, if you have a young person in the family that just finds they love stage, this should be a part of a must read. Because it's so down to earth, it is so realistic that I think it's written in a layperson's language and it's very easy to understand. But I like one of the comments, and the comment is, although acting takes place in the physical world, it deals with the mental world. And for us to discuss and understand our subject, we must agree on our points of reference. With Helen, with your being involved with acting so much, I mean, this obviously because of your dad, it became quite a passion for you. What is it that you find is different for the actor that's on stage versus the actor that is in a movie? We see a lot of stuff on YouTube. There's so many video things going on. How is this going to have an impact? I'm actually asking a question within a question. What are the differences of the different modalities with acting?
I think I'm going to give you an answer within an answer.
Yeah. Okay, let's go for it.
Okay. So slightly going back to your previous question, which was to do with the method. Where the science of acting is different from the method and other acting techniques is that my dad didn't even like to be called a method or even a technique. Rather than it being Sam Cogan's ideas on acting, really the science of acting is, as he says in the introduction, it's a study of human nature. And the book really takes you through the way that we all think. And just to repeat, just so that if you understand how we think, then we can create actors that are really thinking and they are real individuals and those are real consciousnesses. So that's where the science of acting stands aside, and that's why it's very useful just to the layman on the street to pick up and say, you know, so many people I know that have read it have just said, this is fascinating, I'm understanding more about myself, you know, with each chapter that I read, which is a great compliment. To now come to your question about actors on the stage versus the film, but really there is no difference. I mean, the main difference for the stage is that it's a long-term project, and so often there is the question of what keeps the actor motivated, what keeps them inspired to give the same to give a great performance every night. So there is, and that is broached in the book, and in terms of how you can use your imagination to create a fuller character all the time, which then just becomes a very enjoyable experience because you have your set amount of time that's set for the rehearsal, and then there are other things that you can continue to develop through the production time. Where I think the science of acting is a real gem when it comes to acting on film is that because it teaches you how to think the character's thoughts, and so many of our thoughts can be seen through our face.
I apologize if I could get your guest to speak at the moment.
Okay. Helen, your voice is coming across softly. Could you speak a little bit louder? I know you're thinking as you're speaking.
No problem.
Oh, that's much better.
Thank you. Okay, great. So what I was just saying is in terms of film, because so many of our thoughts are expressed through our face, that when you have close-ups, to actually see a close-up of someone thinking thoughts rather than just saying words, there's a very big difference, and I think that's where it can be a huge contribution to the acting world, especially on film and television where there are close-ups.
Let's talk about face reading, because that is mentioned in the book, and I found this fascinating because that is so old in Chinese culture. There are people that will just become superb experts at face reading. And the Chinese were also known for almost having faces you could never read. They even knew how to control the pupils so that if they were trying to buy or sell something that they wouldn't dilate. And this is the mind, you know, body connection here.
That's right.
Let's talk about the face reading here, because I think that this is something, just touching on what you've mentioned, it's fascinating stuff.
Yeah, it's actually something I was fascinated by face reading while I was writing my dad's book, and I thought this was the perfect example where in the introduction to this face reading book, it talks about a woman who was, she had frowns on her faces and she didn't know what the thoughts were that were linked to those, not necessarily frowns, but wrinkles. And so she would put sellotape on those parts of her face, and then she would notice through the day when that sellotape, I don't know if you call it sellotape here, but that tape would pull, and then she would instantly look back to the thought or what she had just said or what she had just done, which was linked to that wrinkle or crease on her face.
Oh, my goodness. Well, that would be sort of painful, because depending on the size of the wrinkles that you have, but it could be pretty painful.
But it's a great way, it's a great illustration of the fact that our faces, our postures, our body, are all manifestations of our thoughts. And there's the chapter Free Body in the book that goes into this in more detail. But once we start slowing down, once we start looking at ourselves, how we behave, how we look, how we carry ourselves, and what thoughts those could be linked to, it's all part of, as you say, this mind-body connection, but also understanding ourselves and what we're doing that's almost become invisible to us, but that we do have a choice in changing.
I want to share something with you. Before the show, I had to take care of some errands, and I walked into this one store. I love people that express themselves in very unique ways, and this woman definitely did. She had the rainbow of colors in her hair, and I just had to chuckle because I was noticing her hair, and I'd noticed it before, and I finished, and I was paying for my purchases, and she happened to be near the cash register. And I happened to turn and look at her, and she said, "You can tell I'm bored." She said, "Whatever colors I've got in here reflect my thinking." And I just had to chuckle, because here is this woman. It's almost as if when I looked at her, I thought, this is like a little girl that gets into her mother's makeup case and says, "I want to see what this is," and ends up wearing every lipstick and all colors of eyeshadow and everything else on her face and wondering, I wonder if this will work.
Yeah.
And here is this woman who had to have been in her 40s, and I just thought, she still has the child in her that's never, ever had a chance to feel free. So the way she does it is by having green and yellow and purple and chartreuse and all of these different colors in her hair.
Yeah.
And I just had to chuckle. So we do speak with how we dress, how we express ourselves, how we move, and it is that presence. I think of a couple of female actresses. I think of Barbara Stanwyck. I think of Sophia Loren. I think of Elizabeth Taylor. I think of Loretta Young, these different women. And I'm just using these women because they were all in that cycle where glamour was it. And when they moved, there was a presence. Audrey Hepburn was known for this essence that just exuded from her. And it's what you call charisma. And there's often a statement made, fake it until you make it. And it's like, find that person that you would like to emulate, that has the qualities that you really want, until it becomes a part of yourself. What would you say was that kind of an attitude?
Well, I think It's interesting what you said about there is that child in all of us, and that seeks to express itself. And really, the root of most invisible thinking are events that happen to us in our childhood that either we couldn't completely understand, or we had too much fear at the time to understand what was happening. And so my dad calls these unfinished thoughts, and they stay with us our entire lives. And I think my only thought about fake it until you make it, and to be copying someone else, is that often this is overlaying something on top of your personality, your thoughts, the way that you think. Whereas rather than overlaying on top, which is the way that a lot of actors are trained to do, is you take the character and you put it on top of your own.
Mm-hmm.
The science of acting guides you to look at what's formed who you are and why it is that way, and then say it doesn't have to be that way, and you can change that to be whatever you want it to be. Does that make sense? Rather than putting something else on top of what's already there. And I think the joy of that is that you come, you go on a journey of understanding yourself a lot more rather than putting, not quite a plaster on top, but, you know, it's putting a little bit of a mask on what's underneath. Because if what's underneath is still causing you pain or upset, then that will still remain there with just the mask on top.
It's interesting what you're saying, because I have observed, and please correct me if my observation is wrong, those that are really skilled character actors are so comfortable in their own skins that when they put on the dressing for the character, I think of Gene Hackman and some other persons, when they do this, they're able to leave that character behind. They don't take it home for breakfast. They are able to slip in and out of the garment of that character comfortably. Am I wrong?
No, I think that's absolutely right. And I think it's really interesting the words you use, so comfortable in their own skin, because that means, or I interpret that to mean, is that they're not preoccupied with what other people think about them. And I think, and I certainly know from having written the book, is that that's one of the keys to great acting, is not to be thinking about what your audience think about you, your director, your fellow actors, but, as you say, to be so comfortable in your own skin, or to be so comfortable with the tools that you have to create your character, you're not looking for appreciation, you're not looking to be liked, you're not looking to be admired, you're just looking to do your job because that's your profession and that's what you enjoy doing. And I think that's, you know, that's a golden nugget that you just, you know, you just stepped on. Because most actors today, it is about how you look from the outside, what the audience think, what your parents in the audience think, what your director thinks, what people are going to say to you when you finished your performance. But with your mind so preoccupied with those thoughts, how can you think the thoughts of the character? And, and so I think that's one of the keys to good acting.
Now, you have the 5 W's, and also you have 10 steps. Now, this book is something that when you're reading it, for those of you listening, it can take you into a space of your thinking that you can enjoy privately, and you can explore parts of yourself that maybe you've never shaken hands with and are not even aware of. The 5 W's, this of course is in the section about working with rehearsals and things of this nature, but they're questions that so many times people ask in everyday life. What's my purpose? What is my action? What's my event? Where am I? When am I? These are things that when you're doing acting, these are questions that are healthy questions to even ask if you're out job hunting.
Absolutely. In anything that we do, it's to really just check what are we thinking about it, what do we want to get out of it, what is our purpose, what are we thinking about at this moment, and what other thoughts are also coming in. Because sometimes we notice that we have thoughts that have nothing to do with the situation we're in, suddenly just start flying in.
Mm-hmm.
You sit an exam as an adult, and suddenly the memories come back of getting a report back when, you know, and you got a C or a D and you expected a B. And all just... The book talks about complexes and how every thought is connected to another thought. And so, this book helps you to slow down and see what you're thinking all the time. And then you'll start to recognize why you're getting the results that you're getting. And if they're the results you want, then that's great. So you know to keep on doing what you're doing. But if you're not getting the results and you keep trying for things, you keep trying at relationships, keep trying at jobs, but you're not getting the results you want, then the book, it helps you to tease apart those thoughts that are causing or manifesting the results that are appearing in your life.
Well, there's just wonderful information in this book, and I feel that it's so much more than being about acting. I think your father was so wise in putting his notes down and putting materials together relative to this, because there is a vitality that he offers to the people who are interested in reading this. the science of acting is so well done, Helen. You did a superb job. And I'm sure if your dad were here, he would say, well done. And would just absolutely just be busting his buttons with pride. Helen, you have a website which is called thescienceofacting.com. And people can go to that website and check out information on this, find out about you. And if you know of any young people, anyone, I mean, there's many people that suddenly when they're in their 60s, they decide they'd like to be in little theater. Well, if this is something you'd like to do, or if you've had a passion for it, get the book, The Science of Acting. It is something that will bless your life in so many ways, not just as being an actor, an actress. It's going to enable you to think in a way that will empower you as an individual. Helen, your website is thescienceofacting.com. I want to thank you so much for being my guest today. It's been an absolute pleasure, and your book is just marvelous.
Thank you so much, Donna. We have workshops coming up in New York and LA over the next couple of months, but it's been a complete pleasure to talk to you about this work and to hear how much you've enjoyed it as well.
Oh, I've just been delightful. This is Donna Sebo. My guest again today has been Helen Kogan. The book, The Science of Acting. Go to thescienceofacting.com and find out more. We're taking a break. We're going to be away for just a moment. Don't go away. We're going to be right back.
The Northwest Women's Show, presented by Assurant Health, is a show that's all about you, your body, your spirit, your life. 400 exhibits, free samples, and best of all, shopping with fabulous women's show specials. Meet Amy Roloff from Little People Big World and cosmetic cop Paula Begon. Bring your questions to Hollywood celebrity stylist and creator of Wynn Hair Care Products, Chaz Dean. Make it a point to attend our free seminars and be inspired by topics that can change your life, like channeling your inner strength, weight loss strategies, and women's self-defense. Plus fun and trendy fashion shows from JCPenney. And backed by popular demand, Seattle's hottest firefighters. Favorite authors Ann Rule and J.A. Jantz. The Women's Show, presented by Assurant Health. March 5th through 7th at Quest Field Event Center. Sponsored by Bartell Drugs, American Family Insurance, Puget Sound Energy, Snoqualmie Casino, The Seattle Times, and King 5. For show information, go to nwwomenshow.com. The Northwest Women's Show. It's such a girl thing.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to DTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's T-T-A-P. TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717. TTAP.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Telephone lines are now open. Give us a call at 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. And what happens if you call in? Well, I'll give you a reading over the air. That's right. All I need from you is your first name or your initial. Of course, I always enjoy knowing where you're calling in from. After that, just sit back, relax, let me tell you what I perceive, and then if you have a special interest that you would like to discuss, we'll be able to do exactly that. So 888-815-9756. Countdown, 4 days until the Pacific Northwest Women's Show. Yes, that's starting on Friday, where I'm going to be hosting a six-speaker forum on Friday, and I'm really looking forward to this. I have six dynamic women. And the first hour, which starts at 1 o'clock, of course, the show opens at 10 and goes until 5, but from 1 until 4, for 3 hours, I'm going to be interviewing, and you have a chance to talk with six powerful women. The first hour is all about money. The second hour is about healing energy. And the third hour is about animals. So it's going to be a wonderful experience. And I appreciate the people at the Women's Show inviting me to do this again this year, because it's a wonderful opportunity to connect and to be able to make things happen in a very special way. And for you to have a chance, for those of you in the state of Washington, for you to have a chance to actually talk one-on-one with these wonderful women. And also, I will be in booth number 407, and I'm going to be before and after speaking engagements during the event. Then I am going to be available for many consultations. So you can stop by the booth, and I'll be happy to do a mini session for you. And also, I have Buku books that are going to be available if you're a book reader as well, and a wonderful drawing. Yes, I've got two special gifts to give away. So all of that is going to be going on at booth 407, and you'll see the big yellow sign saying the Donna Sebo Show, bbsradio.com. You can't miss it. And again, give us a call if you'd like to chat with me, 888-815-9756. Also, for those of you in Washington, I received a call from the people that handle the Boeing Parapsychology Expo. This is something that's been going on for 37 years, and they are changing the title of the show. It's going to be titled The Emerald Spiral. I have been invited to participate in this show, and it's going to be held the 27th of March. So I'm getting more information from them, and I will be able to share that with you, hopefully starting tomorrow. But that will be a one-day appearance. And again, I'll have a slew of books, and also I will be available for many consultations while I'm there. So this is a fabulous event. It's not going away. It's just changing its title name. Donna Sebo here, 888-815-9756. I wanted to share a story with you about a very resourceful woman. So many people are having such a difficult time right now. If they've lost their jobs, they're trying to figure out ways of generating income. I was reviewing a piece of material. In fact, the interview is going to be occurring on St. Patty's Day, about a man and a memory of his mother surviving difficult times in Ireland so many years ago. There are always these cycles we go through. It's what we do with them that makes the difference. And we can all sit in our pity pot if we want and get teary-eyed and blubber and do nothing and end up feeling like we're victims. Or we can be resourceful. Paula Rojewski, who lives in California, she was having a tough time financially. And she had a house, and she said in her local newspaper there was a classified section saying seeking housing. And she said, oh, my goodness, there were so many applications for people. And she said she knew she was going to lose her home if she didn't find a way of dealing with generating some additional income. The thought of having a roommate just absolutely was a no-no for her. She said she did not. She was in her 50s. She had been single all of her life, and she had been involved with her parents, but she really liked her private life. She said, I didn't want anyone else in my house. I didn't want them leaving dirty dishes in my sink. She said, I liked coming home from work, fixing my own dinner, watching TV with a fire in a fireplace. She said, I did not want to share. I did not want to share my house, period. Now, she had bought her home about 5 years prior to this financial situation she was experiencing. She said it's a two-story home, four bedrooms. She said, I just love my home. And I've got a couple of dogs, Daisy and Tara. Neighbors were great. She said everything was just wonderful until the economic bottom fell out in Southern California real estate. Her purchasing agent job at a construction company, well, it was tough times. The company was going through real tough times. Company had cut back, and on her 53rd birthday, she got her pink slip, and she said she thought she was going to find a job quickly. Mm-mm, she didn't. Well, guess what? She was in the no money coming in pattern. So she said, all right, let me check this out. And she had even thought that maybe she'd rent out her house and move into an apartment. But she kept having problems. There was one person, a man, that wanted to do it, and she said, you know what? He keeps procrastinating. It's just not an option. I'm going to have to put a room for rent at. I just don't want to give up my house. Well, she got a lot of callers. But this one call, it was a woman's voice, and her name was Joanne. She sounded like she was an elderly lady. And she said, you know, your house sounds so wonderful, and I just love dogs. Could I make an appointment to visit? So she said, okay. So and there was another woman, within a short period of time later, who said, hi, I'm Patricia. I saw you have dogs. I have one of my own, a border collie, Sydney. You know, your home sounds perfect. If my dog got along with your dogs, do you think you might consider me? She said, okay. Well, both of these ladies happened to visit on a Saturday, the same day, and she didn't worry about the house or the dog. She said everything was spit and polished, and she knew her dogs would be friendly, but she didn't know about these women. What were they going to be like? Are they going to be messy? Are they going to be neat? What if they were busybodies? Can you imagine the amounts of thoughts that ran through her mind? Because this was going against her entire grain for privacy. Well, she just took a deep breath because both of these ladies were delightful. They loved her dogs. Her dogs loved them. Sydney, the collie, was welcome. And she just said a deep prayer and said, okay, it's all or nothing. Well, Joanne came in first. And you know what? She just, like Paula, had never been married. She'd been single. And she said, you know what? I couldn't afford my apartment anymore. So I'm looking for a place that's sort of quiet. I like a home, but I want to be quiet. And she said, Paula said, wow, this is a woman that's sort of like me. Now, Patricia came with Sydney. And Sydney was just an absolutely gorgeous, gorgeous dog. And Patricia said to her, she said, my dog has cancer, and it's been hard finding a place that takes pets. And she looked at this woman, and she looked at Joanne, and she thought, you know, these two ladies would be just perfect. So she told them what the terms would be, showed them through the house, asked them what they thought. Within a week, they had moved in. The house was already furnished, so they put most of their things in storage. And the older lady, who couldn't climb stairs very easily, she took a room downstairs for the downstairs bedroom. And she said, you know what? The rules were laid down in the house. And she said, I was amazed. It was so easy adapting to these people. Joan took care of things, Patricia took care of things, and do you know, it was 2 weeks after Patricia moved in that her beloved collie died. And there was Patricia that she said she just couldn't stay without Sydney. She had to move out. Well, she found out that she was going to be able to get a job. Paula did. Patricia moved out. She was back at work. But she said, you know what? Joanne is still with me. And there's been a wonderful adjustment I've made. I still have my privacy. I still have my quiet. But it's really comforting to come home to a house that has somebody in it. And she said, I really have found that this experience, this change that I was forced to go through, really chose to give me blessings I never even knew I could have. Joanne and Paul are still together, but she said, you know what? I don't mind the changes. My quiet life as I knew of it was over, but a better one had taken its place. It's a wonderful story. I really enjoyed it, and I thought you might too, because it tells us how we as people can adjust, and maybe we get out of our comfort zone sometimes, but that's not all bad. Sometimes there are silver linings inside of what we look at as a very, very dark room of experience. Don't give up on yourself. If you're facing challenges, you'll get through them. And who knows, like Paula, you may find a very resourceful way of dealing with it and attract to yourself the right kind of people, the right kind of circumstances, and it'll all work out. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to take a break for a moment. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. We'll be right back.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay only $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 1-800-872-8852. That's 1-800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Gedrose. Buy it today. 1-800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. The Gentle Way is what we're going to be talking about tomorrow with Tom Moore. And this is about MBO. Well, you're going to have to listen to find out about MBO. Tom is a great guy. This is his second opportunity on our show, and I'm looking forward to having him as a guest. The Everett Principal, Dr. Stephen Brewer, is going to be with us, and he actually climbed Mount Everest, and boy, did it teach him some lessons, and that's what we're going to be discussing. Where the Heart Was, Glenn Boyer will be with me on Thursday, and that is about a novel. And it talks about days of early America, and it's wonderfully captivating. And of course, on Friday, we're going to be having a Best of Donna. We'll be replaying one of my shows because I'm going to be hosting the Women's Forum. So we've got a great lineup this week, and I invite you to join me, tell your friends, and if you're in the Pacific Northwest, make sure that you do have a chance to come out to the Women's Show. It's just absolutely wonderful. By the way, the list for all the guests for the month are up on BBS. My newsletter will be going out today, and my schedule has just been rather hectic in preparation for the big event that's happening at the end of the week. So just know that we are going to be getting that out to you, so you'll have that. And if you want to become a reader of the monthly newsletter and you'd like to get it for free, all you have to do is send me an email, Donna@DelphiInternational.com. Donna@DelphiInternational.com. And that reminds me, if you have a paranormal story, I'm getting such wonderful stories from different people. I want your story, whether it has to do with seeing a ghost, if you're from a different culture. I know a very dear friend of mine who was English. She had plenty of ghost stories to share. But maybe you've had an experience with astral projection, dreams that have come true, whatever your experience may have been. I'd love to hear from you because I'm building up a file of 100 stories, and I want people to know that when this book comes out, it's to help you understand that this is not abnormal. This is part of life. What is considered supernatural really is super as well as natural. And so from that perspective, I want you to feel empowered. And that is why I'm asking for your stories, because your story could make a difference in somebody else's life. Donna Siebel here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. Now, I don't know about you. I'm a tea drinker. I have always loved tea. I gave up coffee a long time ago, not because I believe coffee's bad, just that coffee didn't agree with me. It created problems for me. So I went and switched to tea. Well, I came across a recipe for tea, being such a fan of this, that I thought you might enjoy. It's called Red Rocket Tea, and the ingredients, there's just, you know, 4 ingredients here, including hot water. You're going to need 4 teaspoons of loose leaf black tea or 4 black tea bags. And you need 32 red hot cinnamon flavored candies and then 4 5-inch Ceylon cinnamon sticks, each broken into 4 pieces. 3 cups of water. You want to make sure it's boiled and let it sit for about a minute before you pour it, because all of a sudden if it's really boiling, and I've done this, when you go to pour it into your pot, it just goes, it comes out and it'll explode all over the place. So let the, once the water's come to boiling, let it sit for a minute off the heat and then pour. And then you'll be able to control the water and you won't have that surge of splashing, scalding water get all over everything. Now this is what you do to make the Red Rocket Tea. You take the tea, the candies, and cinnamon sticks and put them in a 1-quart pre-warmed teapot. Now the pre-warmed teapot is something that people that have fixed tea for a long time. You fill it with hot water. That way your ceramic pot, your metal pot is already warm. So then you pour the water out and then you go and put the tea bags, the cinnamon, and the candies in. And then you pour in your boiling water, hot water. You stir, then cover and let it steep for about 3 minutes. And if you have nice big mugs, if you have a big pot, which I do, I have a big teapot, then you can put a half of an orange slice in each of 4 mugs, and then you strain your brewed tea into the cups, dividing it evenly. It's 4 nice size mugs of tea. Now, when you preheat your pot, that is a very good thing to do, because sometimes with certain glass pots or ceramic pots, they may be a little bit fragile if you have an antique one and you don't want to take a chance on it being brittle and breaking on you. So that's why you preheat your pot. It's a very good thing to do. But this is such a wonderful tea, and it just tastes delicious. And when you break the cinnamon sticks, I don't know about you, but I've encountered some cinnamon sticks that are really tough. Take a little bit of a hammer, go crack, crack, because when you crack the cinnamon sticks, then the cinnamon that's inside of it really does a wonderful job at flavoring. But I just thought I'd share that with you. I enjoy a good tea anytime, and this recipe I thought was just so simple and so easy, I figured that that would be something that you might enjoy as well. Donna Siebel here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. I wanted to share with you a story that was in the book Science of Acting. It's about Socrates. A young man asked Socrates how he could get wisdom. "Come with me," Socrates replied. He took the lad to a river and shoved his head under water. He held it there until the boy struggled for air. Then he let him go. Now, once the boy regained his composure, of course, you can imagine how upsetting that was. Socrates asked the young man, "What did you desire most when your head was underwater?" "I wanted air," the boy said. "I wanted to be able to breathe." Socrates listened and nodded his head very slowly. He said, "When you want wisdom as much as you wanted air to breathe when you were immersed in the water, you will receive it." So many times we will look at someone and we will say, "Oh, that person's so lucky. Oh, I just wish I had what they had. Gee whiz, it should be me instead of them." Have you ever had those feelings, or have you ever heard someone say that? Well, too often we do, but would we really want to walk in that other person's shoes? Do we really want what other people want? Do we want, or do we really know what we want? So many times we go through life with blinders on. And our world is so narrow because we don't take the time to open our minds and our spirits to other options. I know a lady who is in her 80s. She lives in New York, and her name is Ellie. Ellie is a survivor of Auschwitz. I had the pleasure of interviewing Ellie a few years ago on my show, and she's become a friend. She's in New York City. I cherish her friendship. We don't see each other very often. But more than anything else, I cherish her spirit, and I'll tell you why. Ellie has seen more ugliness in her life than most of us could even imagine. She has an invalid husband that survived horrors that most of us wouldn't even want, perhaps, to hear about. But this woman goes about life. She doesn't feel that anybody owes her anything. And do you know she's in college taking classes on any subject that's of interest to her? She loves to learn. And she will take the time, she'll take the subway, because in New York, that's the best mode of transportation, and she does what's called auditing of classes. Now, as this woman gets closer and closer to 90, you might say, "Gee whiz, why is she doing this?" Because, she said, "I have a mind, I want to learn, I want to know." And she loves being around younger people. She travels around the world speaking about her experiences, hoping that the books that she's written, the stories that she has to share, will make an imprint on a younger generation that has not seen the horrors that she's seen, and she doesn't ever wish for them to experience it. But she said there is something about life, there's always something new to learn. And it makes her so sad when she sees people in a country like ours that has such disdain for learning. She said, "How can you know what freedom is if you're not willing to grow and to learn?" Ellie is a wonderful example for all of us. And for me, she's been an inspiration. Why? Because she shows that life is meant to be lived. It is meant to be experienced, and you should be open to different options. Sometimes when you've had a product that you've used for a long time, maybe you've had a certain food for a long time that's been a staple of your life, find out if there's a better brand. Ask questions. Don't be afraid to learn something new. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Your fate is related to your invisible thinking. Just like we discussed with the science of acting, to discover who you are means that you're going to discover the golden nuggets within yourself. And that is absolutely awesome. More power to you. This is Donna Sebo. Tomorrow we'll be talking about The Gentle Way, Volume 2, with Tom Moore. Have a fabulous, fabulous day or evening wherever you are. We'll be back with you same time, same place, right here on VBSRadio.com, Station 1. This is Donna. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272, Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.